In 1977, after 16 years in Washington, D.C., O'Neill decided it was time to leave. He was working 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, and his wife was tired of raising 4 children on her own. O'Neill resigned and landed a job with International Paper, the world's largest pulp and paper company. He eventually became its president. By then, some of his old government friends were on Alcoa's board. When the company needed a new chief executive, they thought of him, which is how he ended up writing a list of his priorities if he decided to take the job. At the time, Alcoa was struggling. Critics said the company's workers weren't nimble enough, and the quality of its products was poor. But at the top of O'Neill's list, he didn't write quality or efficiency as his biggest priorities. At a company as big and as old as Alcoa, you can't flip a switch and expect everyone to work harder or produce more. The previous CEO had tried to mandate improvements, and 15,000 employees had gone on strike. It got so bad they would bring dummies to the parking lots, dress them like managers, and burn them in effigy. Alcoa was not a happy family, one person from that period told me. It was more like the Manson family, but with the addition of molten metal. O'Neill figured his top priority, if he took the job, would have to be something that everybody, unions and executives, could agree was important. He needed a focus that would bring people together, that would give him leverage to change how people worked and communicated. "I went to basics," he told me. "Everyone deserves to leave work as safely as they arrive, right? You shouldn't be scared that feeding your family is going to kill you. That's what I decided to focus on, changing everyone's safety habits." At the top of O'Neill's list, he wrote down safety and set an audacious goal: 0 injuries. Not 0 factory injuries, 0 injuries, period. That would be his commitment, no matter how much it cost. O'Neill decided to take the job. "I'm really glad to be here," O'Neill told a room full of workers at a smelting plant in Tennessee a few months after he was hired. Not everything had gone smoothly. Wall Street was still panicked. The unions were concerned. Some of Alcoa's vice presidents were miffed at being passed over for the top job. And O'Neill kept talking about worker safety. "I'm happy to negotiate with you about anything," O'Neill said. He was on a tour of Alcoa's American plants, after which he was going to visit the company's facilities in 31 other countries. "But there's one thing I'm never going to negotiate with you, and that's safety. I don't ever want you to say that we haven't taken every step to make sure people don't get hurt. If you want to argue with me about that, you're going to lose." The brilliance of this approach was that no one, of course, wanted to argue with O'Neill about worker safety. Unions had been fighting for better safety rules for years. Managers didn't want to argue about it either, since injuries meant lost productivity and low morale. What most people didn't realize, however, was that O'Neill's plan for getting to 0 injuries entailed the most radical realignment in Alcoa's history. The key to protecting Alcoa employees, O'Neill believed, was understanding why injuries happened in the first place. And to understand why injuries happened, you had to study how the manufacturing process was going wrong. To understand how things were going wrong, you had to bring in people who could educate workers about quality control and the most efficient work processes so that it would be easier to do everything right, since correct work is also safer work. In other words, to protect workers, Alcoa needed to become the best, most streamlined aluminum company on Earth. O'Neill's safety plan, in effect, was modeled on the habit loop. He identified a simple cue, an employee injury. he instituted an automatic routine. Anytime someone was injured, the unit president had to report it to O'Neill within 24 hours and present a plan for making sure the injury never happened again. And there was a reward. The only people who got promoted were those who embraced the system. Unit presidents were busy people. To contact O'Neill within 24 hours of an injury, they needed to hear about an accident from their vice presidents as soon as it happened. So vice presidents needed to be in constant communication with floor managers. And floor managers needed to get workers to raise warnings as soon as they saw a problem and keep a list of suggestions nearby so that when the vice president asked for a plan, there was an idea box already full of possibilities. To make all of that happen, each unit had to build new communication systems that made it easier for the lowliest worker to get an idea to the loftiest executive as fast as possible. Almost everything about the company's rigid hierarchy had to change to accommodate O'Neill's safety program. He was building new corporate habits.